You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
Well, I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, May 4th, 2011, or we should say, may the 4th be with you. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dahl Lunch District of New York City. Yes, may the 4th be with you, folks. That's for all our Star Wars geeks. Who says I'm not in touch with pop culture from 30 years ago? We have a wonderful program for you today. On the program, we'll be welcoming Dave Murphy. He is the president of fooddemocracynow.org. We mentioned in the past, he'll be talking to us about his organization and, in particular, the issue of the Monsanto Roundup Ready soy beans, which was approved without any restriction by the USDA some time ago. And apparently that's, they've developed a new pathogen. Good for them. Bad maybe for the rest of us. We'll find out more later. First, you know, I've gotten a bunch of emails about this. And, you know, there's still a lot of questions about the Osama bin Laden killing. But the questions that people are sending me emails about are small bore, as far as I'm concerned. Whether or not, why did we get conflicting reports as to whether or not he used one of his wives as a human shield? He did have a gun. He didn't have a gun. I think it's quite clear that this was a kill mission, even though we've heard reports that there was a desire to capture him if possible. That would have been nice. I'll repeat what I said yesterday, which is at least we can pretend that we would have imposed some form of civilized justice on this guy. And this clip makes me very proud to be a New Yorker. Some moron got on the L train. We have the video at majority.fm. Some moron got on the L train, a subway. The L train, where? It goes out to Brooklyn, right?
Yeah.
Cuts across at what, 14th or at 14th Street? Yeah. Cuts across 14th Street, goes into Brooklyn, 14th Street in Manhattan. And full of people. I mean, just jam-packed. Must have been rush hour. Some guy gets on with his flip camera and wants to make a video. And the look on the face of these people at this guy. And look, you know, there are plenty of times you go in. I've seen them shoot a Star Wars episode short film on the subway. People on the subway are not, you know, they sometimes they participate and stuff. I've seen people sing along with a mariachi band or a cappella groups. So there was a real judgment made here by the people on the subway as this idiot got on there and wanted New Yorkers to chant like some other idiot celebrating that we killed a guy. Now, don't get me wrong. Am I losing sleep over the fact that Osama bin Laden was killed? No. We killed 100,000 civilians in Iraq, at least. By our own government's account. But one would like to think that we still have some vestige of just being civilized. And, you know, I don't quite see the benefits yet of killing bin Laden beyond maybe the symbolism. We pull out of Afghanistan, I'll start chanting. But here is this. The audio is pretty good. Just imagine the looks of literally 100-plus people just staring at this moron as he pans his camera around. All right, let's play it.
All right, New Yorkers, this isn't always appropriate, but it is today. So if you don't mind, anybody with a pair, join me. USA! USA! Come on, USA! Bin Laden's dead! USA! Anybody give a shit? USA! USA! All right. You're welcome to all the military. Everyone who protects you while you sleep.
You're welcome to all the military. This moron couldn't even get that straight. Anybody who's got a pair! Like, you really need brass balls, I'll say, to chant USA. Unbelievable, some of the morons that we have amongst us. They walk amongst us. They look like normal people.
My favorite part is everybody flipping them off in the video.
Dude, are people flipping them off?
I don't know if you saw that. There's some people flipping them off.
One person flips them off. I think the video needs Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
That's the thing, is that, you know, we walk around, we take the subway with these people, and they're morons, and you have no idea until they expose themselves from behind a flip cam. All right, I will talk more about bin Laden and the right-wing lies about torture, securing this information. Some of the legitimate questions that surround this issue. We've got some great stories about Massey, those morons, asshole, douchebag, who that mining company responsible for the deaths of many miners. But first, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Dave Murphy, president of Food Democracy Now. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, we have Dave Murphy. He is the president of Food Democracy Now. You can find it online at fooddemocracynow.org. Welcome to the program, Dave.
Hi, Sam. How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. Now, tell me a little bit about your organization, if you would.
Sure. Food Democracy Now is a grassroots community based in Iowa. We're about 250,000 members nationwide. We work, do a lot of online petitions, kind of like a move on for the food movement, trying to help change public policies to benefit family farmers, farm workers, improve, access to local, healthy, and organic food, try to create a sustainable food system for the 21st century.
And we've lost a little bit of that stability, haven't we? I guess it was a month or two ago that the USDA basically gave a blanket go-ahead to Monsanto to essentially completely deregulating its GMO alfalfa and sugar beet seeds. Is that right?
Yeah, on January 27th, the Obama administration, with orders from the White House to the USDA, gave the go-ahead for Monsanto's Roundup Ready or genetically engineered, commonly known as GMO alfalfa, to be approved. The important thing about alfalfa is we don't eat it. It's hay, but it's the main livestock feed for cows and for dairy, for, you know, dairy cows. So the main thing is it's a major threat to conventional growers who grow hay and alfalfa, because they're losing an important export market in Japan, in Asia, and in the Middle East and in Europe, which will not accept GMO food that's not labeled. The other thing is the major threat to the organic dairy industry because of certain genetic contamination from Monsanto's genetically engineered product.
Yeah, I mean, and that contamination happens basically if you've got a field that's growing GMO alfalfa, inevitably a bird or the wind starts to bring some of those seeds into surrounding areas, right?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, nature works in not so mysterious ways. I mean, we have pretty there's another a very important vector for transmission of genetic material is bees. You know, bees pollinate and they fly from plant to plant. They get the pollen on them, and then it takes a little bit. I mean, studies have shown Montana released this crop initially, I think in 2006, seven had been planted. But then they were halted because Center for Food Safety took them to court, and they, you know, held them. Center for Food Safety has done a great job and held them off for years. And during that time, they had very limited fields planted, but at the same time, there was still widespread GMO contamination of alfalfa. It's called feral alfalfa. It grows along the side of roads. But now this alfalfa is containing Monsanto's genetically patented genes. And, you know, it's a problem. It's a major problem for farmers. It's going to be a problem for consumers because there's a letter written by
All right. Well, let's before we get to the health concerns here, we also know that Monsanto essentially has in the past. I don't know if they're still doing this. My understanding is they'll go and they will test other people's crops. And if they find any of their patented DNA, they will sue them. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, in the normal world, that's called trespassing when you go onto someone's land and take and stealing. But for Monsanto, it's kind of what they call legwork to intimidate farmers. You know, most of these farmers are not buying their seeds. There's a famous case in Canada with Percy Schmeiser and canola, and you know. A lot of when GMO canola was approved in Canada, a lot of the farmers around him planted it, and he had been a strong proponent of non-GMO canola, and so his fields were contaminated, widespread contamination. Monsanto knew that he was a seed dealer and had collected, you know, good genetics for over 50 years. So they went on his farm, found some genetically contaminated canola with their gene in it, and then they sued him in the court. Now, this has happened time and time again all across the United States, and it's really, it's an unspoken tragedy in rural America, what this company is doing to family farmers.
And let's just talk about the USDA ruling, because my understanding is that they could have approved, it wasn't simply a binary choice to approve or disapprove of this. They could have approved it in limited fashion. They could have approved it in a way that had maintained the rights of people to have other crops. They could have approved it in a way that would have sequestered it for a while to basically test it out. They didn't do any of that, did they?
No, there was a plan on the table at some point this fall and early winter of 2010 to basically allow planting but create separation, geographic separation distances between organic farmers and conventional growers and the farmers that will be planting Roundup, you know, Monsanto's Roundup Ready GMO alfalfa. The problem was that fell through pretty early on. I was at a meeting here in December in D.C., And I found out basically that the White House came in and stepped in on DOFAC. It was basically called, the plan was called coexistence, trying to make it so GMO, you know, growers could get, could, and organic growers could, quote unquote, coexist in the world, and it wouldn't be a threat to organic growers. The problem is Monsanto's product is wildly out of control, that, you know, you can't really control nature or gene flow. And as a result of that, you know, coexistence is impossible. And, you know, we have an interviewer, a scientist, basically says that it's really the road to annihilation for family farmers that want to plant non-GMO crops and organic farmers.
And we should also say that the issue here, and for people who aren't quite aware of what Roundup Ready plants are, they are basically crops that have a genetic resistance to, well, I guess, poison, so they can sustain poison, and so everything around them will be killed, i.e. weeds, and not the crop.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Roundup, you know, is a chemical. It really, you know, for its time when it was first introduced, it's been on the market for over 30 years, but it really became, they really became heavily reliant on it. It was when Monsanto patented the Roundup Ready gene and inserted it in soy and soybeans and corn. And, you know, Monsanto owns 93%, more than 93% of the soybean genetics here sold and raised in the U.S., and they own 80% of the corn in the U.S. So they have a virtual monopoly on our food supply in a lot of ways.
And so after they approve, after the USDA approves this Roundup Ready alfalfa and beet seed, sugar beet seeds, it comes out that a Dr. Don Huber had basically said this was a huge mistake because, well, tell us about some of his findings.
Yeah, well, Dr. Huber is a professor emeritus at Purdue University. He spent 35 years at Purdue really researching and helping find solutions to create a you know, viable agriculture system. He worked very much in the model of the industrial agriculture system, and he, when there were problems, he tried to find solutions. He was a plant pathologist, so he studied soil-borne diseases and plant diseases. And he wrote a letter on January 17th to Secretary Vilsack, trying to warn him that a team of scientists have been discovering, veterinarians and a team of scientists basically have been discovering a problem with a link between Monsanto's Roundup Ready corn and soybean, which is fed to animal livestock, and the discovery of a brand new organism, which is creating a large spike in infertility problems in conventional livestock producers. There's a number of dairy herds, a bunch of dairy and cattle farmers, and hog producers in Iowa that I've talked to that have experienced this problem. And the scientists began, you know, they had a spike in infertility, meaning 20% rates that would not basically become fertile or hold their seed, as they call it. Today in on farms, animals don't have sex. They're actually artificially inseminated. And it's a very costly process. They were finding that at least 20% of the time, sometimes up to 50% of the time that they were trying to inseminate an animal, it would not hold and would not carry to term. The other thing is they were also finding certain rates, a very high rate of false pregnancies or spontaneous abortions in cattle and dairy and hog confinements. And so this is, you know, not only this is a major threat to animal health, but it's also a major economic loss for those farmers. Every time they have to pay for an artificial insemination, it's a very, very costly thing. But it's also a major health threat. I mean, whatever is causing this infertility problems, it's now been linked to. Now they discovered, they searched for years, they couldn't find it. And then in the fall of 2010, they finally found this organism that was linked to spontaneous abortions in placental tissue of cows and pigs.
Now, Dave, am I going out on a limb here by saying that if there is a pathogen that is a function of this Roundup Ready crops that is making its way into cows and pigs and other livestock. And presumably we, as humans, drink the milk or eat the meat from these animals, that we're getting that as well?
Well, I would just say, and I don't want to, obviously I know some things that I'm not fully at liberty to disclose, but I would say Dr. Huber made that warning in his letter to Secretary Vilsack, that there was a possible link to causing human problems. Really what these scientists have discovered, that glyphosate acts as a, what it does is it kills certain microflora beneficial organisms in the soil. As it kills those beneficial organisms, it also allows harmful ones to rise to the surface. Also, the other factor we need to remember is glyphosate or Roundup is a strong metal chelator, meaning that it ties up or binds up certain nutrients. Some of the nutrients that are being found deficient in Roundup ready crops, corn and soybeans, are manganese, cobalt, iron, zinc, and calcium. These are very important, minerals or nutrients that any animal, human or any mammal, let's put it that way, needs to have a properly balanced nutrition and also to maintain a healthy immune reproductive system. So what they found is the way Roundup works, it's not only creating problems in the soil, creating a problem with the rise of negative funguses in the soil, but it's also creating micronutrient deficiencies, which are then making the animals lowering their immune system and making them more susceptible to disease and reproductive problems. So the question is, are we eating the same type of feed that those animals are? And the answer is yes. 70 to 75% of the processed food sold in America contains GMOs, or genetically modified organisms. Most Americans have no idea of what they're eating. And Monsanto and biotech corporations have intentionally kept it that way.
And so what, so at this point, now that it's been approved, what's the game plan here? Is it simply at the very least to get it labeled, or what is your organization attempting to do?
Well, we do believe that labeling, mandatory labeling, is an important right that Americans should have. We believe that American citizens have a basic right to know exactly what they're consuming, and they're feeding their children, they're feeding their families. I think that it would be considered outrageous that a company could genetically engineer an organism in a laboratory, then run some what would be in the real scientific world would be some pretty shoddy science, and then they would be basically getting, and basically the government is allowing that to happen.
And so are you guys looking to are you guys lobbying the government to get some labeling or what?
Yeah, I mean, we have, ran petitions on labeling. We've had conversations with people at the USDA. We think it's vital that they do that. We think it's the next phase in making sure that Americans are confident about their food and how their food is produced and their food supply. The other thing is we're trying to make sure that the full science on what the letter that Dr. Huber talked about is going to be conducted. That Dr. Huber did not want this information to be made public. He reached out to Secretary Vilsack because he had serious concerns. And then he has worked in the system for 50 years as a research scientist. He actually is an ARS research coordinator for the National Plant Disease Investigative Committee at the USDA. So he works as a scientist. He's worked at the USDA with USDA scientists for years. He was hoping that he would get some support from the Obama administration to, one, get funding and also to get the proper scientific expertise to help come to discovery of the origins of the problems that these farmers are experiencing in the field.
All right. Well, Dave Murphy, president of fooddemocracynow.org. People can get more information at fooddemocracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Sam. It's great talking to you.
Great to talk to you, too. All right, folks, we got to take a break. When we come back, talk about that Massey mining story, as well as a ruling by the Supreme Court a week or two ago that basically, again, makes it that much harder to redress corporate fraud, corporate malfeasance. I know that's shocking to you. Shocking that the Supreme Court would rule in favor of corporations. Can anybody guess? Can anybody guess what the vote was on that court? If you can guess it, you'll get a cookie. A metaphorical cookie, not a real cookie. We don't have the means in which to deliver you a real cookie. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Folks, I know I mentioned to this to you Monday. Just in case you missed it, I did an MS walk this past weekend. It's part of actually the State Police Troop K team. I walked pretty fast. I don't want to brag, but I walk pretty well. And so if you would like to sponsor me in retrospect, if it makes you feel any better, I am still sore. I can't tell if I'm at the age now where my ass is getting so large that my pants are getting tight in my behind, or if I'm actually developing some type of ass muscles from walking so much. Either way, folks, if you can afford it, you can head to the link at majority.fm. We have a link up to my MS sponsor page, $5. My goal is $300, and I think we're pretty close. I don't know. I think we're halfway there, somewhere between halfway and almost. And, of course, to support this program, you can use our Amazon link to buy any of that Amazon junk you buy. I just bought a bunch of DVDs for somebody's bar mitzvah. Proud father is listening. He's not having a bar mitzvah. It's his son that's having a bar mitzvah. Bought a bunch of DVDs. Use the link. And you can find that link at majority.fm. Of course, support our sponsor, justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code majority. Get a 10% discount. And if you can become a member, it would be much appreciated and would... help us continue this program, not just improve it, but to continue it. Meanwhile, let's talk about this story. It's sort of, I don't know. I don't know if it's shocking. I've come to expect little more from corporate America. This is coming from the Wall Street Journal. It's actually one of the free... we can't afford a subscription to the Wall Street Journal here, folks. But this story was one of the free ones. Sort of surprising. I get, they don't find it very important for their listeners anyway, their readers. Anything that in any way maligns corporate America in any way. Out of Washington, U.S. mining regulators found multiple safety violations at a West Virginia mine owned by Massey Energy Company.
Surprise, surprise.
Saying Tuesday that the conditions were, quote, nothing short of outrageous. When was the last time you heard a mine regulator say that? And accusing the company of failing to clean up its act after the 2010 explosion at the Upper Big Branch mine. The Mine Safety and Health Administration, and this thing was a cesspool. The Bush administration left this thing a cesspool. With an amazing revolving door, said Tuesday it had issued 20 withdrawal orders and 5 citations to the Randolph Mine in Boone County, West Virginia. The mine is owned by Massey Energy. Administration officials conducted a surprise inspection Friday at the Randolph Mine, during which they found mine workers engulfed in coal dust and combustible materials in the form of loose coal accumulated in working areas. I'm going to go out on a limb here and guess that these guys are not unionized. I'm just going to go out on a limb there. Or if they are, it was union channels that brought this inspection. They also found that ventilation curtains used to protect workers against black lung were not being used in some areas. Ah! A little bit of coal in your lungs never hurt anybody. Ish. The conditions at the mine were, quote, nothing short of outrageous and posed a, quote, serious risk of fire and explosion. What are the chances of a mine exploding and trapping miners? So slim. Said Joseph Main, Assistant Secretary of Labor for Mine Safety and Health, in a statement. We were very disappointed by the results of the inspection, said Massey General Counsel Shane Harvey. This is why we pay so much money to our lobbyists and try and get our own industry-connected mine safety regulators so that we don't get results like this. Oh, I'm sorry, that last part was not a quote. The actual quote was, we will take all actions necessary to ensure that our operations comply with the letter of the law. Or, in other words, we will lobby harder to have the law changed so that we can get away with this shit, or make sure that we have more friends in the regulatory bodies so that we get a tip-off next time there's an inspection. There you have it. And don't look to the Supreme Court for any help, folks, for workers or consumers. Last week, as reported, I believe, in the Washington Post or by the Citizens Congress Watch Division, David Arkush, large corporations won a substantial victory at the Supreme Court on Wednesday as ideologically split justices.
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
Well, that applies.
Faster five.
Yes, yes. If you guessed, the ruling was 5-4, ladies and gentlemen. Someone told me on Twitter the other day that I'm misdoing radio by saying ladies and gentlemen. I should be talking to you. You win a cookie. Just you. You alone will get a cookie.
I just assume everybody gathers in large rooms to listen to our show.
Well, I do too. But you're supposed to talk to people on radio as if it's one-on-one. Now, coincidentally, for this show, we have only one listener. Or actually one lady and one gentleman, if I don't include you two. You two scruff buckets or whatever.
One of them is Dorsey.
One of them's Dorsey. Still just longing to get back into the game. The justices ruled that consumers may not band together in a class action arbitration to pursue their complaints. So, in other words, when you sign a contract with your wireless provider, let's just say, for example, in paragraph 473, subsection 85, in print that would be indecipherable unless you were to scan it and then blow it up on a computer, it says, you can't sue us if we consistently overbill you, or we don't give you the product we said we would, or if we change the terms of this inconsistent to the terms of this, whatever it is, no matter what happens, we must settle this through arbitration. Okay, fair enough. And so what some people who deal with this, consumers, realize that, like, hey, yeah, these guys have screwed me out of $47. This is wrong. I could go out and I could go to arbitration, cost me time and money. I would never get this. They won't change their practices. But some enterprising trial lawyer realizes, hey, wait a second. We can get them to change their practices. We can get the money owed by the consumers, and I can make some money here if we band all these people together as a class action. If Blankety Blank Wireless Corporation has been systematically overcharging tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of customers, we can all band together, get them to change their practices, and have this redressed. They can afford to hire a good lawyer, and we can essentially do the job that the FCC or government regulators aren't doing, making sure that these people are, these companies are delivering the product that they say they are at the rates that they said they should be. This is just not just cell phones. According to the public interest group Public Citizen, their chief lawyer, Deepak Gupta, whenever you sign a contract to get a cell phone, open a bank account, take a job, you may be giving up your right to hold companies accountable for fraud, discrimination, or other illegal practices, because now you do not have the means to band together in a class, as a class, as a group of people wronged, and go through one arbitration process. At issue on Wednesday's ruling was a California law that does not allow bans on class action or efforts in arbitration or litigation. So not only did the Supreme Court say, we, for some reason, are not going to allow for class actions, for people to band together and protect their rights, we're going to overrule a California state law, Trump state power, and saying that states can't even say that you can band together in an arbitration hearing. Justice Antonin Scalia said that the California law was at odds with the 1925 Federal Arbitration Act. This big states' rights guy, remember? The Federal Arbitration Act, whose overarching purpose was to facilitate streamlined proceedings. In other words, to avoid litigation, you go through an arbitration hearing. He added, requiring the availability of class-wide arbitration interferes with the fundamental attributes of arbitration and thus creates a scheme inconsistent with the FAA. How is this inconsistent? The fact that many people could enter in as one wronged party into arbitration? He doesn't quite get to. Breyer, Justice Breyer, in the minority, countered that settling a class of complaints was far more efficient than thousands of separate proceedings. If the spirit of this Federal Arbitration Act was to streamline proceedings, what could be more streamlined than having one arbitration case that settles thousands of arbitration complaints? He said that requiring each complaining customer to go through the process would most likely discourage participation and draw little attention from lawyers willing to help. Of course, what rational lawyer would have signed on to represent the family in this case in litigation for the possibility of fees stemming from a $30.22 claim, Breyer wrote. So corporations can now prevent, as David R. Kush from the Public Citizens write, consumers and small business owners from exercising what is often their only real option for challenging companies that defraud them by millions or even billions of dollars, banding together to file class action lawsuits. This case could be equally devastating to millions of non-union employees who need class actions to challenge systemic discrimination by their employees. The Supreme Court has given major corporations the green light to engage in nearly limitless wrongdoing against others, so long as they do it in relatively small dollar amounts, which ensures that no one can afford to challenge the misconduct with a class action. There you go. And meanwhile, the Supreme Court also refused to hear a case where a federal appeals court ruled in September that a cheerleader who refused to cheer for a basketball player on her own, from her own school, who she had accused of raping her and who pled guilty to a lesser charge, didn't have a right to not cheer for this guy. The girl was 16 when she said she was raped at a party by her Southeast Texas hometown of Silsbee in October of 2008. She identified the assailant as this guy, Rakeem Bolton, a star on the Silsbee High School football team. Bolton ultimately pled guilty to a misdemeanor assault charge and received the suspended sentence. At a February 2009 basketball game in Huntsville, Texas, the girl joined in leading cheers for the Silsbee team, which included Bolton. When Bolton went to the foul line to shoot a free throw, she folded her arms and went silent. She said the district superintendent, his assistant, and the school principal told her she had to cheer for Bolton or go home. She refused and was dismissed from the squad. She sued the school district, claiming that they had punished her for exercising her right of free expression. Federal courts have ordered the girl and her parents to reimburse the district more than $45,000 for the cost of defending against a frivolous lawsuit. Submitted without comment, ladies and gentlemen. I want to play this. I didn't play it on the main show yesterday. I want you to hear this. We have posted this clip at majority.fm. You must hear this because I know your friends, your conservative friends and family, do not believe that St. Ronald Reagan ever raised taxes. They will tell you that he lowered taxes and doubled revenue during his administration. What they will not tell you is that if you account for inflation and the taxes that Reagan raised, he did no such thing. What they will not tell you is that the 8 years prior to Reagan saw an even greater expanse of revenue, and the 8 years following also more revenue at a higher tax rate. But what you can tell them is if they have an issue with the idea that Ronald Reagan raised taxes, they should listen to this clip of Ronald Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, saying this when asked the question by Krista Freeland on, what was it, Meet the Press or This Week on ABC just this past week.
Question for you. Yes. You worked for Ronald Reagan. Do you think that America, the American economy, so you're like a red-blooded capitalist, could it sustain higher taxes than it has now?
Absolutely. In 1982, we were looking at the jaws of the worst recession since the 1930s. We overdid it in 81, cut taxes too much. We came back with a big deficit plan in 1982. Unemployment's 10%. The economy's in dire shape. And we raised taxes by 1.2% of GDP, which would be $150 billion a year right now, not 10 years down the road, but right now. That's what we did in 1982 because we still had people in government who realized you can't simply be putting on this kind of debt into the world financial
market. Turn off the sound. I can't breathe. I'm having a heart attack. They raised it by 1.2% of GDP? What the heck? That's not possible. Not Ronald Reagan. No, I'm getting the vapors. Oh, my Lord, I've always relied on the stranger, on the kindness of strangers. And now I hear the St. Ronald Reagan, he raised taxes by 1.2% GDP of GDP. Hundreds of millions of billions of dollars of raising taxes. Oh, my Lord. Oh, someone hand me my sanitization card. I think I'm having a heart attack. And one silent teardrop drops from the top of the Heritage Foundation building in downtown Washington, D.C. I remember the time when we could delude ourselves that Ronald Reagan only cut taxes. Sadly, that time is gone. I will leave you today with many more stories in my stack about Paul Ryan's gutting of Medicare, still mandates that you buy private insurance. The one thing that they all claimed was a complete affront to our freedom. The report on the many protests that have taken place this week that you'll never hear about in the mainstream media. And hopefully, God willing, the failure of the Gang of Six to gut Social Security and impose austerity on us. Don't hold your breath, but it looks good, at least today, slightly. Not really, but a little bit. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. But for now, you can join me on the flip side at Majority FM is the Majority FM is the IM. You can call me at 646-257-3920. Maybe tomorrow we'll really try and push the calls. Maybe we'll really try and get a conservative caller on. Spend the whole day just trying to get a conservative caller. Maybe that's what we'll do. All right, folks. Oh, on Friday, we'll be talking to Morgan Spurlock. We're going to be jam-packed because I think we're going to have Cliff Schechter in studio. Our first in-studio attempt. We'll be talking to Morgan Spurlock. We'll be talking to that other guy who does our movie reviews. I can't remember his name now. Chris Rosen. Chris Rosen. We'll be talking to him on Friday. Tomorrow, who knows? Who knows what's in store for us tomorrow? All right, folks, join me on the flip side.